The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM Today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
Wisconsin is one of the leading states when it comes to manufacturing. Thousands of jobs in the region tied to the process of making things. But making an item is just the first step in making a profit. Once a company produces a product, it has to get it to market. And that's the focus of this edition of UWM Today. Our guest is Anthony Ross, who recently joined UW-Milwaukee in the newly created Rockwell Automation Endowed Chair in Supply Chain Management, part of the Lubar School of Business. Welcome, Anthony. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you, Tom. Good morning.
So did I describe this notion of what supply chain management is? Once you make something, you got to get it out the door and get it to where it's supposed to be.
That captures the front side of the supply chain, and very accurately so. But there's the other side of that as well, which is the sourcing side of it. And we have to also consider where we procure or obtain the inputs that go into the stuff that we make.
So essentially, supply chain is moving everything it takes to make a product, and then the product, once it's made, onto the customer or out into the marketplace.
Absolutely, absolutely. But we can't forget, as you just mentioned, the importance of the customer, because if we're not doing the things that the customer values and is willing to pay for, then we are producing, if you will, the wrong widgets.
I talked a moment ago about how Wisconsin has really been historically one of the leaders in terms of manufacturing or making stuff. Is that one of the reasons why you came to Milwaukee and now are in this chair that's been endowed by the Rockwell Company?
Yes. When I first was approached about the opportunity to join the team here at the Lubar School, quite frankly, I did not know much about Milwaukee. I had traveled through the city of Milwaukee several years ago. But on that first trip here, I remember very clearly my approach to the flight landing at the Mitchell Airport, and I was struck by what I saw as I observed the landscape. And the manufacturing base, the economic base here was just phenomenal. And I said to myself, this is Milwaukee? And by the end of the interview process, I remember quite frankly and clearly that question became, this is Milwaukee. And it's a wonderful economic base, a hidden gem, I believe, in the productive capacity of the United States.
Even though there have been some serious erosion that has occurred in that manufacturing base.
Oh, sure, sure. And there are natural cycles of business, upticks and downturns. But if you look at the core foundation of what makes companies work, it's all about innovation, I believe. And I'm reminded of one of my favorite movies, and that's Pixar's A Bug's Life. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with that movie, but The Bug's Life has a story to it. And the story is simply this. There are some grasshoppers that want to eat the ants if the ants do not continue to provide them with sources of food. And there was one ant in the entire colony that was the innovator. And this ant was trying to convince the queen ant, if you will, of developing a strategy to permanently remove this threat posed by the grasshoppers. So this little innovating ant actually went out and tried to identify other bugs, hence the title of the movie, A Bug's Life, who could help him scare away the aggressive grasshoppers. Well, he finally found one bug who gave him the idea. Why don't you build a bird? Because after all, birds eat grasshoppers. And long story short is, this ant was then able to convince the remaining members of the ant colony to design a fake bird and then procure all of the components required to build the body of the bird, the fuselage, if you will, the wings and the moving parts. And every ant in that colony then assumed a specific role. And they turned themselves into a manufacturing facility trying to serve who? Serve themselves, who are also the customers. And they were successful at innovating, designing, producing, and then delivering this bird, if you will, to scare away the grasshoppers who were threatening the entire colony. So that's really what I saw and still see here in Milwaukee, the innovative capacity to design, to make stuff, and then to serve the world.
Wow, that great analogy. When you think about Milwaukee and your role in terms of studying the supplying of all of those pieces, is Milwaukee unique because we have such a great concentration of these companies here? Or are the lessons that are learned or that you're studying here perhaps applicable everywhere?
The lessons here are certainly applicable most anywhere here in the United States because of our prowess in innovation and our long history in manufacturing around the country. But if you look at the manufacturing base here in Wisconsin, to the tune of about $17 billion a year, and that's after the economic downturn, where are the products flowing? Well, those products are going to countries such as Côte d'Ivoire, Morocco, Israel, Egypt, Vietnam. So beyond Canada and Mexico, we are, in fact, a global state. $7 billion worth of exports per year are out of the Milwaukee and West Allis region, and they go all around the world. So, in fact, we are already a global competitor. But there's an opportunity here that might be useful in helping turn around the state economy, I believe, personally.
Well, let's talk about the mechanics of studying supply chain management. What's the most important or essential aspect of knowing where all the parts are out on the table?
Yeah, sure. Well, 20, 30 years ago in manufacturing, you had an individual who might be responsible for managing the parts flow for a company. And that individual was really focused on the question of where are my parts? Well, today, that same individual is actually focused more on I need information so that I could better coordinate the flow of my parts that are produced in disparate locations around the world. So it's about information. It's about knowing what the customer wants. It's about knowing how to make the goods. It's about knowing how to design the products themselves and where to source them. So what we're doing here at the Lubar School is actually revamping our supply chain management curriculum to adopt a more integrated approach to teaching supply chain management. And that includes areas such as global supply and sourcing, and then manufacturing. And these are separate courses. And then the transportation and logistics piece of it. And then we overlay on top of those drill down courses the role of information and listening to the voice of the customer.
You know, as I think about your description of keeping track of all of these different pieces that go into the final product, I can't help but think that today the job compared to 20 years ago, it may be more complex because pieces are made in so many different parts of the world. We also have computers. We also have technology that allows you to actually find one particular part in that proverbial haystack. That's one of the big differentiators today from the way that companies used to operate in terms of keeping their fingers on where all the pieces are in the past, right?
It certainly is. And I think you highlight a very important point that we need to think about as well, particularly as educators, is that consider this, that in China or India, based on 2004-2005 data released by the World Bank, there are 5 million new cell phone subscribers per month. And we all know the robustness and power we have in our hands with our smartphones of today. But extrapolate that simple monthly figure to a year, and you're talking 60 million new customers, right? You've seen the commercials with Brown is good and We Love Logistics by UPS. But so what it means is that now we have access to more and more customers around the world.
And so rather than looking at this as a threat for communities like Milwaukee that may have been feeling besieged with a lot of the production or assembly work being moved to those markets overseas, there may be more opportunities now.
It's about opportunity. Opportunity and the ability now for manufacturing firms to be able to make what they make smarter, faster, better and cheaper.
So knowing that there are places like Vietnam, like China, although perhaps not as much China today, because as I understand it, the cost of production is increasing as manpower costs begin to go up in that country. As you think about these other places around the country, talk about the opportunity that a community like Milwaukee or a state like Wisconsin has to tap into demand, knowing that they are half a world away.
Yeah, sure, Tom. So if you look at some of the what we call the emerging markets around the world, and not just Brazil, Russia, India, and China, but some of the smaller emerging giants, if you will, like the Vietnams, the Ecuadors of the world, some recent data suggests, and this is as recent as 2008, 2009, if we look at the exports from Wisconsin, the fastest growth destinations are Indonesia, Vietnam, Morocco, Cote d'Ivoire, or Ivory Coast, and Israel. And we're talking rates of growth that exceed somewhere in the order of 20 to 70% in terms of the growth of exports to those destinations. Whereas the trend in some of our traditional partners, Canada and Mexico, those flows, while important, are actually either stable or starting to decline somewhat. So the real growth opportunities are, in fact, in these what I call these emerging giant small countries. And it's imperative that we as educators begin to infuse that global mindset in the talent that we're producing, and to the extent possible, as we have collaborative opportunities with industry, to be able to see what they, as managers and executives, struggle with late at night, the things that keep them up, and always be willing to learn what keeps executives up late at night, and transfer that exposure to our students as we educate them in the process.
Well, you study this for a living, you know, and you've got a great national reputation in terms of how to go ahead and both help companies understand how to move the pieces around the table, if you will, but also help students get a better idea of the opportunities that are here. Could you give us an assessment of American companies today and how sophisticated or how far along they are in terms of realizing the full potential that supply chain management can bring to their operation?
Yeah, sure. And let me just, if I will, give you just a quick example. If we go back to the 60s and 70s here in the United States, the big heyday in U.S. manufacturing,
where we had the Alice Chalmers and you know a lot of the Heil, the big great big companies
absolutely.
That employed hundreds of thousands of strong backed men and women.
Absolutely. And so, if we compare where we are today with where we are then, one of the big differences, at least that I have witnessed and seen, is that as more and more foreign companies began to do business with those big mammoth U.S. companies, the way in which those foreign companies did business was more of a kuretsu, to borrow a word from the Japanese language, where it was about relationships. And these kuretsus really focused on developing the small companies in this family of companies, to the extent that these companies learned how to make their components much more efficiently and much faster and much better. And as the business opportunities grew, so did the kuretsu and the companies comprising the kuretsu. And so we as American manufacturers need to take a page from that playbook, I believe, and think about how do we protect our small and medium-sized enterprises. Wisconsin alone has over 6,800 small and medium-sized enterprises and about 80,000-plus workers whose productive output is exported, that is, the products that they make. And so we are a global state. But we need to think about how can we maintain this base of innovation and productive capability here in the United States in ways that are meaningful. And with the corporate base that's here in Southeast Wisconsin, I believe as a source of innovation, it should be worth pursuing the notion of developing even further and even investing in the small to medium enterprise-sized enterprises here in the Southeast Wisconsin.
You're listening to UWM Today on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack. In the studio with us, we're joined by Anthony Ross. Anthony recently joined UWM. He is now occupying the newly created chair of supply chain management that was started by the Rockwell Automation Corporation. This connection with Rockwell, it seems like a pretty nice match because of that company's long history of manufacturing and also a worldwide footprint in terms of where they're located. How did they find you, or how did you find them?
Great question. Well, they found me through our dean and our vice chancellor at the system, and former president or former chancellor of the system, Carlos Santiago, about a year or so ago. And we engaged in some discussions and really explored, you know, what are the next steps that the Lubar School should take in the area of supply chain management, because the next step we take does matter. It matters to our students. And so we had opportunity to visit, and they got to know me. I got to know them, some of their executives, and had a great visit. And from there, things just seemed to take a life of its own, and we reached a point where this was a win-win for all. Well, it's just that simple.
And it also is a win-win for the students. And actually, I want you to tell another story that I heard about yesterday that I found intriguing. You used the bug story as an analogy for describing how supply chain management works. But there's also a fish story, I understand, that you can share with our listeners that you shared or actually walked students through as they began to get a deeper or better appreciation for just how critical supply chain management can be. Why don't you tell us what you did?
Okay, sure. And this came about, just to give you some context here, we were talking about how do you make supply chain, and for that matter, just general education, relevant in today's environment. I mean, after all, we're teaching to the MTV generation. So the critical issue for education is to keep it relevant, maintain the rigor, but also make it real world, make it matter to the students so that they can form connections to the material that they're learning. And one of the ways that I enjoy doing that is to actually take students out of their element and visit companies' operational environments that are sometimes dirty rather than an office, and make it personal. And I had the opportunity to take some students overseas to follow the sushi supply chain. And sort of, you know, the tuna comes out of the water, it goes to a port, it's weighed, and then it's probably put in stock somewhere. Someone comes and buys it at an auction.
For a very big price,
for
usually
a very large price. And we're talking about 600 or 700 pound tuna. And then that tuna is taken to a fish plant where it's processed. Some of it goes into cans. Some of it goes into fresh sushi that's served in a restaurant. Or some of it is put onto a tray and sent to grocery stores. So we went through and visited facilities that produce each form of sushi, if you will. And my students toured each of these facilities where the sushi is processed and manufactured, beginning at 5 a.m. one morning through about 3 p.m. the next day. And along the way, I actually happened to purchase some of the sushi. And we had a nice little dinner that evening, unbeknownst to them until that moment. And so after spending the entire day following the different stages of the flow of the sushi processing, the students actually consumed the sushi. So they were intimately involved in touching the supply chain. And there's a practice in supply chain management or field that's known as closed-loop supply chains. And the students actually lived, and this is a story, lived the closed-loop supply chain because not only did they see and touch the supply chain the previous day, but that evening they consumed the supply chain. And then we all know what happens 6 to 8 hours after you eat. The next day they departed with the supply chain.
And so it's like the life cycle of that product played out right literally in front of them.
That's a
great story.
Making it personal.
What sort of opportunities are there for young people today to work in this part of the business world, making sure that the pieces are in the right places for companies? Is there a career path there for folks?
Oh, Tom, the opportunities are tremendous. Whether you're working in the area of purchasing and sourcing raw materials and intermediate goods, or the actual manufacturing stage, or the inbound transportation, or the outbound transportation. All along the supply chain, there are various positions that are factory-focused or supplier-focused or customer-focused. And the opportunities are tremendous for those who have the passion to want to always be willing to learn something new. Because the dynamics of supply chain today is that nothing is standard, nothing is stable. And the data that's needed to make critical decisions is often not available. And so it's about learning how to make decisions using the best available tool sets that we have and to be able to respond to the need to make decisions in a timely fashion. So it's the ability to think and the ability to analyze. And I think students who are ready to make a commitment to their college careers, whether it's University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee or any other university in the country, if they bring those basic foundations, a passion about wanting to learn, they can be successful in supply chain management where the opportunities are really abounding now that the economy is starting, from all indications, starting to tick back upwards, and there is this growth orientation towards hiring that we've been listening to in the news.
In this global economy, how critical or important is it for these students who are going to learn how to move the pieces around the table, if you will, for them to be able to speak other languages? Can you do all of that work and just sit at a desk in Wisconsin or in the U.S., or does this involve appreciation for other cultures, other
sure.
societies?
Excellent question. If you look at American universities today, even today, there still are anywhere from 15 to 30% of student bodies around universities today that are foreign nationals attending college or universities here. And I believe it's very critical that not only do tomorrow's university graduates speak a foreign language, but I think it's also more and more critical that they spend an internship or a co-op working for a company overseas. And again, going back to my point earlier, you know, we've got to take a page out of the playbook of our Asian friends so that we now can improve our own capabilities. And I'm talking now about our education and our students now. And I believe tomorrow's managers have to be fluent in at least two languages.
Wow. Wow. That's a real challenge, isn't it?
It's a challenge, but it's also an opportunity because, after all, the resources are here in virtually every university to, in fact, learn another language. The question is, what are students willing to invest in themselves as they pursue that first degree?
What languages do you suggest? Are there parts of the world where the opportunities in the next decade might be greater than others?
Sure. There certainly are the Francophile countries, and many believe that if you learn to speak French, you can probably go just about anywhere in the world. And my brother is an example of that. He speaks about six languages.
Sounds like an underachiever to me, actually.
Well, I'd say so. But I believe speaking French or speaking Mandarin or Japanese would be the kind of language that I would pursue were I in college these days.
Thinking about supply chain management, up until now in the program, I think I've had much of the focus on the work that's involved in making sure that you know where parts are, how you connect a supply, the parts that go into a product to the plant where it is actually assembled, and actually tracking the movement of that information. But there may be another side to this I'd like to explore. How important or what role does a person in supply chain management get involved in determining the quality of a production facility, for example, halfway around the world? Is that something a supply chain management person would be doing?
Absolutely. And the question is, what does that mean and how relevant it is to the firm? We call that a part of supplier assessment or manufacturing plant assessment, which are critical elements on an annual basis for companies that are even based here in Milwaukee conducting a supplier review. I was speaking to a couple of executives just last week who were just about to head out of the country to visit their Chinese suppliers and enter rounds of negotiations and renegotiations for contracts. And part of doing that meant that those managers had to get out of their office onto a plane, 14 to 16 hour flight, to go and put their feet on the ground at their suppliers' plants.
And literally kick the tires of the place that may be making something for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the beauty here, particularly in the things that we like to try and accomplish with our program here in the Lubar School, include exposing students to those very practices while they are still students through our partnerships and emerging partnerships with companies that are in Southeast Wisconsin.
And that's where the extra languages may come in handy, because if you're looking at people who are making something for you 8,000 miles away, you really have to know them and develop a relationship.
And more importantly, it makes you more attractive as a new hire to the companies who need that talent.
Yeah.
For their supply chains of tomorrow.
Just a couple of minutes left, Anthony. As you take a look at the next few years here in Wisconsin, what do you think are the critical junctures or points of decision in terms of what Wisconsin firms need to do in order to truly embrace this whole notion of using supply chain management to improve or enhance their profitability?
Sure, sure. I believe the first, based on the several discussions I've had in my short 6 months here with company managers and decision makers, I believe the first issue companies are giving attention to is access to talent, supply chain graduates. And I believe companies need to consider the status of their relationships with universities in gaining access to talent, but also, I think, Tom, helping these universities maintain the rigor and the relevance in their curriculum. It's got to be, I believe, especially in these frugal economic times, about partnering and partnerships and lasting partnerships beyond just sending students to the company. I think we've got to talk about what the faculty can do to help engage and enrich that relationship, and at the same time, what companies can bring to the table in terms of their wealth, their wisdom, and their work ethic.
And so it's both working in tandem with each other, the university trying to serve the industry and industry making sure that they're expecting or demanding the right kind of student.
The right kind of student. So it's about talent. And then the other point, the second point I think companies should actually be looking at is the role of innovation. As they begin to look for and search for new product ideas, where are the ideas going to come from? I believe that it's in the small to medium-sized enterprises. And looking for ways to enhance the capabilities of these small to medium-sized enterprise, transfer their operational knowledge and capabilities to these potential new partners are going to help keep these firms nimble and ready to innovate and compete on the global economy.
Anthony, we wish you the best as you continue your relatively new role here in Milwaukee and working both at the Lubar School and with area businesses in this important area of supply chain management.
Tom, thank you. It's my great pleasure.
Anthony Ross, Rockwell Automation Endowed Chair Professor in Supply Chain Management, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Well, that's all for this week, folks. Thanks for joining us. As usual, we love to share these conversations with you, the people who really are making the institution at UWM a partner with the rest of the community. See you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet the faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.